Hey, everybody. This is Ricky Rackman from Headbangers Ball and the Cat Outs Hollywood podcast. And you are listening to Talk To Me. And of course, remember to keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into the show. This is episode 207. And the guest this week is the mighty Ricky Rackman, former Headbangers Ball host, current Cat House Hollywood podcast host, and so much more. You guys know him from the NASCAR world and so many other things, man. Ricky is a busy man. So thank you to Ricky Rackman for taking almost an hour out of his day to chat with the Talk To Me podcast. Meant a lot. And I do kind of gush on him in the episode, so I'm not going to gush on him too much now. But I definitely can say that if it was not for Ricky Rackman, this show would not exist. My love of heavy metal would probably be not as much. A lot of the past guests on the show are bands that I got into through Headbangers Ball. And I hear the story so much that I would record Headbangers Ball Saturday night and watch it throughout the week on a loop almost when I got home from school. And I've heard that from other people. I know Chris Sinzak was the same way. And I know a lot of you out there probably did the same thing. I still have VHS tapes all over the place with Headbangers Ball episodes. So very cool to have Ricky Rackman on the show. And as you guys know, the podcast is brought to you by Scott Bowling, our good friend Scott Bowling down in Atlanta, Georgia. Good company with bowling. Make sure you're checking him out, scottgoodcompany.com, or head over to YouTube, search out Good Company with Bowling. Let him know that the Talk To Me podcast sends you. And it looks like Ricky Rackman is going to be a future guest on Good Company with Bowling. So there's a full circle, circle of life, circle of podcasts, circle of YouTube shows. We're all on each other's shows. And that's another great topic that Ricky and I get into is podcasting, because he might be the aficionado of interviewing and heavy metal and all that other stuff. But you know what? I've been in this podcast game for almost 4 years. I kind of know what I'm doing. So it was good to chat with Ricky about being a podcaster and the podcast community. And speaking of podcast communities, make sure you guys are going out to Rockin' Pod 3, the Rockin' Pod Expo, Nashville, Tennessee, August 2019. I hope to see you in Nashville. So much good stuff over there. So search out the Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo 3. Look at all the details. Check out all the guests. And I will see you guys down there in August, Nashville, Tennessee. It's going to be so much fun. Also, update on the live show, Uncontrolled Noise, will be next Thursday. And I think what I'm going to end up doing is actually still continue to do the podcast in this form. But then if there are cool segments on the live radio show Thursday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on uncontrolledNoise.com, those segments will be released throughout the week. So you'll get the Talk To Me podcast, and then you will get the Talk To Me live segments throughout the week on this feed. So if you need more of me throughout the week, there you go. So thanks for letting me take a couple of weeks off, getting ready to do another move. That's going to be cool. Get the new Talk To Me studio together for the live show. It's going to be a lot of fun. I got another great interview with Preston Nash, formerly of Dope and formerly of Primer 55. So it's a long, great conversation. We recorded it a couple of weeks ago here in Louisville, Kentucky, when he came through playing in one of his bands. One of his bands is called Gasoline Chaser. Make sure you guys are checking that out. And so that was cool to see and to talk to Preston. So that'll be out next week. So make sure to stick around for that. So without any more of my ramblings, let's listen to some classic White Zombie. I feel like White Zombie is what we need to play here. Here's some White Zombie. Talk to Ricky Rackman. Get Rob Rivera's pick from the kit. And you know I'm going to play some Pantera in there somewhere. And then I will talk to you guys momentarily. We'll be right back.
swear about this world are the cats worth living.
Hey, it's Ricky Rackman.
Hey, it's Joshua Toomey.
Hello, Joshua. How are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Really, really good.
Good, good. Glad to have you on the podcast, man.
It's an honor
to have you on.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, let's dive right into it, man. We are on to talk about Ricky Rackman's Cat House Hollywood podcast. And I just have to say, welcome to the podcast world. How have you enjoyed being a podcaster?
It's so funny. It's like, you know, for a living, I do host a nationally syndicated radio show called Racing Rocks, which is about rock and roll and racing. And I've been doing that show for 16 years. And, you know, before that, I was on MTV. And the podcasting thing always seemed like, I don't know, it just seemed like, I don't know, podcast. That's something that like somebody talks about conspiracy theories. And then I started listening to certain podcasts and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then it was like, all I was doing is listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh, why don't you, you should write a book about this. You should write a book about that. And I just couldn't sit down to write a whole book. And I had a feeling it wouldn't be the book that somebody wanted. And then everybody's like, oh, well, you can work with another writer and do this. I'm like, no, I can't do that. I got to do it myself. So I threw one podcast up there, which was the first one of the Cat House Hollywood podcast. And I said, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to pick one story of the Cat House and just tell it and get somebody else to tell the story with me. And the first one was like 11 minutes long and it did well. And I was like, well, that was kind of fun. Let me bring out some more stories. And then it just got bigger and bigger. And then it got like really big. Like I didn't like, especially like these past 2 weeks, if I said, hey, how many people do I think will listen to it? This week we surpassed it. I mean, to be number 4 on iTunes and have 7 episodes in the top 100, nobody's ever done that. To have 7 episodes in the top 100 of rock podcasts. So I was like, oh, okay. So, and I'm just doing this myself. So to give you the answer to the question that you asked, I really am having fun. I love the medium of podcasts. And what I love about it is that anybody pretty much can do a podcast, which is good, because if you ever think, hey, I'd like to be a reporter, or I'd like to be a storyteller, or I'd like to be a writer, anybody can do it. But it's also bad because there's a lot of crap out there. But when you find something you like, you stick with it. And, you know, I can drive around hearing a bunch of people talk about stuff that I like. If I was interested in, you know, comic books, I can go find a podcast where they're just talking about comic books for an hour, or metal, or NASCAR, or anything. I mean, I really like it. And, you know, today was the first time that I did an interview and somebody said, hey, and we've got podcaster Ricky Rackman. I go, I'm a podcaster?
You know? Sounds so dirty, doesn't it?
but you know what? It's really, really fun. It's really fun. And the fact that people are liking it and reading the reviews and seeing the, I guess, downloads that it gets is just, like I said, it's just really flattering, because I am doing this myself. I'm not exactly sure what I'm doing. And because I don't have a network or a producer or an editor, I make these shows and then I put them on there before anybody else listens to it. So whoever is the first person to download an episode is the second person to ever hear that show.
Yeah, you know, I definitely know that feeling. Yeah, I've been a day one listener of the Cat House podcast just because of being a fan of yours, and I definitely wanted to check it out. And the one thing that I've noticed that you've done is you've done it quote unquote the wrong way, but it turned out to be the right way, because you put out, you know, 6-7 episodes before you really pushed it. And then now that it's being pushed on Blabbermouth and you're going on other podcasts, people can go back and listen to, I think it's 9 episodes now. And in the algorithm world that we live in, that's actually super positive, that if everybody goes back and downloads 9 episodes all at one time, you know, iTunes and all of the other podcast catchers are noticing that, holy shit, Ricky Rackman is pulling all these numbers out of nowhere. So I think you, in a way, you did it against the rules, but you did it. It turns out to be the right way.
See, the thing is, I was worried because I did, you know, maybe it's the fifth episode or there's one episode that is much more of an audiobook that talks about, you know, my story going through punk rock and then, you know, renting a club to do the a party before we did Cat House and all these crazy stories. And I was like, man, and right now we're starting to promote it and nobody's going to ever hear that episode because I released it when I didn't really, you know, have many listeners. I mean, from the very get-go, it was doing okay. But so I was like, oh, I'm bummed. But then I looked, you know, and I hate to say that I look at the charts all the time, but I'm looking at here's my thing. When I first put the podcast out and it really wasn't on the charts or making that big of a movement, I just kept on telling myself, who cares? The charts don't matter. They don't count. They're not real. And then when I'm on the charts, I'm like, well, hell yeah, look at this, you know? So when I look and I see that the top podcast yesterday was the first episode, I'm like, oh, and they're also listening to the second. So it's just so flattering because people like it and they're like it enough that they want to go hear the other ones. So that's what's, and because it's not current, it's not like, oh, I don't want to hear this one because this one talks about something that happened 2 weeks. It's like, no, this one talks about something that happened in 1989 and the other one talks about something that happened in 93. So they're all old stories, you know? So it's really, really fun. And, you know, as you know, when you make a podcast, it's very personal because you're doing it yourself and there's not a lot of outside sources telling you what to do, which is the case when you do radio or television or stuff like that. So if you put it out there and people like it, it's really, really nice to hear.
So I wanted to ask you about something that you recently said on the Josta show. You were talking about, you know, you don't get to host Riot for Ronnie or, you know, a lot of these things that you should be asked to host, you know, that maybe an Eddie Trunk or someone gets. And you talk about, you know, that not a lot of people are reaching out to you. But I feel like since you've said that, like you, the podcast is getting pushed a little bit more, your name's popping up a little bit more. Do you think that was a case of like a, you know, a squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing that, you know, a lot of people just didn't know that you wanted to host those type things. And so I think that they're popping up and being like, oh, well, maybe we should have Ricky Rackman do a little bit more.
I don't know. Nobody's asked me to do anything yet. I mean, I'm doing a lot of interviews. I even did Eddie Trunk's show 2 days ago, which was kind of fun. And the Ride for Ronnie thing, and this was not a dig on Eddie Trunk at all. It's just like, I can honestly say this with quite confidence, with the exception of Neil Peart in Rush, there is not a person in rock and roll that rides motorcycles as much as I do or as far as I do. I mean, I've been coast to coast 12 times. You know, I ride motorcycles everywhere in America. I've been in every single state. And everybody knows that me and Dio got along great and I love Dio. And when they did a Ride for Ronnie and nobody even asked if I wanted to be a part of it, I was like, well, I'm a biker and I work in, and it was just, you know, me being a little whiny bitch and upset that I didn't get asked. And when Eddie got every metal festival, I was just like, well, how come? And I, again, this is not a slam on Eddie Trunk at all. I was just like, why doesn't, and then, you know, I got to realize, hey, I think I'm pretty sure that I'm even older than Eddie. Maybe they don't think that I'm relevant and that's okay. And also, like you just said, they probably didn't know that Jamie Josta said the same thing. He goes, does anybody know you want to do these things? I'm like, well, they never asked. He's like, does anybody know you want to do it? I go, but they could, because I don't have an agent or a manager and I'm not out there pushing stuff. You know, the podcast is something I did by myself. So that's why it didn't work. So, you know, I hope more things come up. I mean, and, you know, I'm just being a whiner because there's a lot of great things that come up that I do work. And so a lot of them are racing related. I'm going to do Dee Snider's charity ride again this year. So, you know, it was just me whining and was always wanting more and more work.
The one thing that I've noticed, too, about podcasting in the podcast world that was a byproduct that I was not expecting was the camaraderie and the community of metal podcasters. you know, the underground guys, you know, where you're doing, you know, different shows and people reaching out. And if you have a question about, you know, why is my audio sound like this? And someone's going to pop up and say, oh, you need to do this. There's like a really nice community. And, you know, all the way up to, you know, where there are now expos and, you know, like the Rock and Pod Expo in Nashville they do every year. That's a lot of fun. Everybody gets together. The byproduct community throws me off. And it's actually the probably one of the better parts of, you know, being a podcaster.
You are 100% correct. I didn't know what to do. So I called. I have some friends that do a podcast for Death Wish Coffee called the Fueled by Death Cast. And so I didn't know how to do it. So I called them and I asked them questions. And I asked Jamie Josta questions. And I asked Dean Del Rey questions. And I asked anybody that I knew that did a podcast, like, I don't know how this works. What does this mean? Why am I not on Spotify? Why is this? And they would answer. And that's the thing that's really cool. And that's why, you know, when I get to do your show, or if I get to do somebody else's show or Jamie's show or whatever it is, it's really cool. And, you know, and I've become friends with other people like Danko Jones. So today, if I'm driving and I'm listening to Danko Jones on Jamie Josta's podcast, and then I come home to do your podcast, I mean, it is fun and it really is a community. And the thing is, people don't have to listen to one show. You can listen to 10 shows. So if you hear me on your show and then you listen to my show, it doesn't mean you're not going to listen to your show. You're still going to listen to both, because we want as many shows as you know. I want to fall in love with 20 podcasts. So I have 20 shows to listen to. So if me talking about your show or talking about somebody else's show is going to get you listeners, it's not a contest. You know, so if people are listening to your show, that doesn't mean they're not going to listen to mine. We're all benefiting and we're all having fun and we're talking about rock and roll. So it's great. So, you know, if anything, it's more in your face and your head than ever with these type of mediums. And there's a lot of great rock podcasts.
Yeah, there's a ton out there. And the more you get into it and the more you find, you know, there's so many, you know, niche podcasts. And, you know, this podcast only talks about Metallica, or this podcast only talks about that. You know, there's so much out there. I think I'm subscribed to like 100 and something podcasts. And, you know, obviously I don't listen to all of them all the time. But, you know, a topic comes up I want to check out, then I'll check it out. But yeah, I mean, it's a fun world to be in, man, especially, you know, like in the expo world and stuff like that, being able to congregate and see each other.
I haven't done that and never even considered it until like this past week with what's been happening with my show. It's like all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, you know, like I don't have sponsors, you know, and that's my own fault. And now people are starting to, hey, can we buy a spot? What I would do is every episode I'd put a commercial on eBay.
I liked that idea too. And that's another one of those things where that's where you have like, there's no rule book to doing a podcast. So I'm going to put my ad sponsor on eBay. I'm like, that's so outside the box that, you know, you probably didn't even realize it was.
It was the stupidest, most brilliant thing I've come up with, because I said, I'm going to put my ad on eBay. And if you want to buy the ad and say you love your girlfriend, you can do that. Or if you want to do that. And then what happened is, because there's this group called the Rack Pack that are just good people and they follow everything I do. And then they were like, hey, who do you think is going to advertise on Ricky's show this week? Oh, and then twice there were people that bought the ad that said, I don't have anything to advertise. Just talk about this guy's band. Yeah. I'm like, real? I mean, that happened twice. Because I don't have like Patreon or any of those things. I don't ask people for money to listen to my show. So when people do stuff like that, I'm like, man, it's so cool. And it's you know, we live in this generation where people love to spew hatred and tell somebody how much they suck and they hate. And then when you do stuff in podcasts and people are so positive, and I got news for you. If you're listening to a podcast you hate and you love saying how you hate all the episodes, okay, there's something wrong with you, because if you don't like the podcast, just don't listen to the podcast, you know? Exactly. It's not like it's on your station so you can't watch it. It's like you have to seek these. So you know, I think it's very positive, and you know, people like to read reviews and see that people like what you're doing is always flattering. And you're always going to get the smattering of people that will complain no matter what you do, but they really don't matter. You know, if you're doing something and people like it, what's better than that? You know?
Well, the one thing I did want to talk a little bit about Headbangers Ball, because the more, you know, once I got the okay for this interview, it really like took me down a rabbit hole of, you know, in my brain, I guess. And, you know, you were my Headbangers Ball host. You were, I'm 39. So like, and I got into metal about 1990. So,
right.
You know, from 90.
That was the year I started.
And then obviously the one thing I did want to bring up was the Pantera special you guys did right before Far Beyond Driven came out, or as Far Beyond Driven came out, turned me on to my all-time favorite band. So I have to say thank you for that. And then ask you, you know, what do you remember about going to Cowboy Stadium and all that from that special?
That was so much fun. That was a great show. And I remember, you know, Dime, like we're going to his parents' house, and we just, it was kind of like, we just went all around town and just drove around to all these places that they wanted to go to and that we wanted to go to. And the great thing about Pantera is that they really were just like all of us. That, and you know, Dime and Vinny were guys that would be just pounding beers with you at a show. They just also happened to be up on stage, and it was so much fun. And I know that they wanted to kick a football at Dallas Stadium, at Cowboy Stadium, so that was really fun for them too. And it was just one of those instances where we just got to do some great stuff.
Yeah. That's, you know, and they, you know, over the years, I got to meet those guys probably 12 times or so throughout different various projects, and obviously Pantera. But yeah, I mean, that's the one show that always I go back to. And then when they debut number one, did you feel a little bit of, you know, feel good about that, and maybe felt like you, you know, contributed to their debuting number one?
I never felt like I contributed to any of that stuff. I mean, people tell it to me and they were like, oh, you know, you were the one that turned me on to Headbangers Ball. And when they say it, I mean, you're the one that turned me on to Pantera. And Pantera is the one that they actually say the most. They say, you turned me on to Pantera. And that's really, really flattering. But I'm just kind of like, well, I was just there playing. Like, it wasn't like I said, hey, guys, let's play Pantera and let's do this. It's like, this was my job.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say stuff like that, it's very flattering. I don't think it's deserved, but it's still very flattering.
Well, I think what Headbangers Ball did for Pantera was to showcase how much of a band Pantera was made for TV. They were made for home videos, and they were made for, I talk about this all the time on the show. Could you imagine Dimebag Darrell with YouTube? Like how he would just go insane.
Oh my God.
Or Facebook Live or a podcast. Like he would be a superstar in this world.
Absolutely.
That we have now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It'd be like the partying in the parking lot, drinking beer. When I was in this punk rock band called Battery Club.
Yeah.
And Dime and Vinny came to go see us when we played in Texas. And they went there. They bought our cassette. They bought our T-shirt. I mean, they were just party guys. And they and what happened is, this is a story I should really tell on the podcast. What happened is the band decided to invite all of my band with them to the studio to go hang out. And so all my guys went and hung out with Pantera, and my guys could not keep up with them drinking. So everybody in my band was so trashed. And the next thing you know, my band is having fist fights with each other. One guy is saying to let the bus go ahead of them and just leave them there. And people are crying. I mean, it was just like, it was just because it was just these bunch of Orange County punk rock guys partying with these professionals from Dallas. And it was just so much fun because they really were the guys. Like if they weren't in Pantera, they would have been in the van with you going to see the shows, you know, partying and drinking in the parking lot. I mean, that was what was so great about Pantera. And that I can say, I would say that more than about them than any other band. They were really like for the people.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. They were definitely the people's champs, and they had the talent and the wherewithal behind it to back it up, too. I know we only have 20 minutes. That's what I was given, so I know we got to wrap it up. But what's the...
We can go a little bit longer.
All right.
Okay.
I try to...
I'm having fun.
Well, that's definitely worth my time now. So with... You know, having Headbangers Ball for so long and being attached to music and metal for so long, the one thing that I kind of felt with you was that you kind of, not that you shied away or shunned metal or anything, but when you kind of went so much into racing, you know, I don't know how many of us followed you over to it. Do you feel like, you know, that community is kind of coming back and being like, where the hell you been, Ricky? Like with this podcast?
Yes. I mean, here's the craziest thing is like, you know, I don't know. Are you a sports fan at all?
I'm a huge football fan. Yeah. So.
Okay. Who's your team?
Tennessee Titans.
Okay. So you love the Titans. Okay. And you love the Titans and you say, you know what? I'm going to be a hardcore Titan fan. I'm going to go out and I'm going to go to every tailgate in America with the Titans. Okay. That doesn't mean you don't like rock and roll anymore. It's just like you're doing something else that you love. I love rock and roll. I love racing. I also like making s'mores. I like all these things. I found a way to make a living in my passion. I've always been very diverse in the music that I listen to. So if I'm listening to Slayer, I might also be listening to Shooter Jennings. And I like music in general. And I think that people wanted me just to be the metal guy and only be the metal guy. And that's not who I am. I'm Ricky that loves metal, that loves punk rock, that loves NASCAR. And, you know, NASCAR has made me money a lot longer than rock and roll does. But that doesn't mean that's like saying, look, if you're a lawyer or if you're a plumber, does that mean when you're working on the somebody's sink that you're not a rocker? It's like, no, it's like, that's what you're doing for a living. The reason that I wasn't on MTV talking about heavy metal is because they fired me and there was no show. If somebody called any day and said, would you come on MTV and talk about heavy metal videos? I would do it for free, not to be famous, not to make money. I would do it because it was so much fun. So I got work in NASCAR because NASCAR is my passion. I went after that job. I tried no matter what, because believe me, nobody wanted to hire some tattooed guy from Los Angeles in a Southern sport, but I forced my way into it the same way, you know, I almost did with rock and roll, but rock and roll was easier. So I think a lot of people sort of think like, oh, what happened to Ricky Rackman? He's a whatever happened to, you know, oh, he's probably working at some coffee shop in the corner when in fact, you know, I'm financially doing better than I ever have. Just because I'm not doing heavy metal shows anymore doesn't mean that I'm just not doing, and I'm still going to shows. And you know, then it was like, oh, what are you doing here at the Hatebreed show? I'm like, what do you mean, what am I doing here? I'm here because I love this band. So it just got to, it was kind of funny that a lot of people made up their own conceptions about who I was or what I was all about. And a lot of it, which probably was justified, because if I'm a kid and I'm sitting at home seeing this guy with no TV experience at all having the best job in the world, I'd be jealous and I might talk a little smack too. If I saw the way I was on the first show interviewing bands, I was so terrible. And if I saw myself and I'm a kid watching me, I'd go, dude, that guy that hosts Headbangers Ball sucks. Because I didn't know what I was doing, you know?
Well, see, I was a kid watching Headbangers Ball. And it's funny when you talk about, I've heard you talk about your time on Headbangers Ball and kind of getting backlash, you know, as a kid, as a 12-year-old kid watching this tattooed guy on TV talking about metal that had the best job in the world. I'm like, this is the guy's living the dream. And, you know, that's just Ricky Rackman. There was never a... I don't know. I guess maybe it was just the innocence of being a preteen.
No, but. Well, it's also me being stupid in the way of if I got there was a time that I was getting 400 handwritten letters a week, 400 letters a week.
Yeah.
Okay. That meant somebody took out an end. See, what they used to do back in the day is take a pen and paper, write it, put it in a stamp. And so I'm getting 400 fan letters a week and they're great. And then one guy writes something like, you suck. And I go, that guy's right.
Yeah.
And that was my own problems with something that I still deal with sometimes. And that's the problem that a lot of people that are in this industry, you know, I happen to think the world of Ice-T. And Ice-T really likes to target the haters and answer them, which sometimes seems like, dude, why? It's like there's 1 million people telling you they love you, and this idiot tells you that and he's the one that's getting the attention. And that's what we're all doing. And I do that too. And, you know, there are certain sites that when I came out with a podcast, I knew, don't go to the site, Ricky, because, you know, if I did the greatest show in the world, which I think it's pretty damn good, that people are going to talk smack about it. And if I have 10 of them saying, Ricky, your show's great, and one guy says your show sucks, I'm like, that guy's right, and I'm going to obsess about that one. You know, so it was me always looking for the negative. And if I go into a crowd and everybody's like, yay, and somebody says, you suck, I'm looking at that guy. Oh, God, that makes me so mad. Instead of focusing on the people that are being positive. And I think a lot of us in this industry do that. And that's what sucks with social media. It's given everybody the power to say any negative thing they want. And it's silly. And it's stupid for me to acknowledge that. And that's why I haven't been, you know, that's why, you know, if somebody writes something negative about me, just delete and block. And I don't care right. about how many followers I have. It's like, oh, I can do that. And it went away, you know?
That's the one thing with this whole podcast world and putting yourself out there. And, you know, if you have even a hint of self-doubt, and as soon as someone writes that negative review, you're like, see, I knew it. Like, that's exactly, like, no matter how many positive reviews I get, like, if that one guy writes that one bad thing, you're like, I knew it. I am a fucking fraud. You know, like, nobody will like this show type stuff. So, yeah, I get that 100%.
Especially with the Headbangers Ball, if somebody's saying, like, you know, why are you playing that video from Firehouse? Why are you playing Firehouse? That's not heavy metal. I'm like, yeah, I didn't pick the video. And they're like, Ricky, you suck. You're playing all these like ballad bands. Why are you playing this ballad? Why are you playing that ballad? You suck. I'm like, I don't pick these videos. This is my job. If they say, I don't like the Cat House Hollywood podcast because you talk, okay, that's okay. Every single word that I say is written by me and produced and edited by me. So if I get criticized for something on this podcast, that's okay, because that you're at least insulting me. But to criticize me for something on Headbangers Ball, where I was sometimes just a talking head, is just like stupid.
I get it. You know, it's funny. I hear a lot of people, they complain about, and this is, you know, obviously 25 years ago stuff, but, you know, they would complain about Stone Temple Pilots or Soundgarden or whatnot being played during Headbangers Ball when it was being played the other 23 hours a day too. But the one thing, even as a kid, I knew that was there to, if people were flipping through the channels, like, oh, I like this video. And then all of a sudden they get hit with Morbid Angel and they might actually like that too. You know, it's like.
But it was wrong. I mean, that criticism, you know, people can criticize and say, why are you playing this mellow band and this heavy band? Well, because the genre is still rock and we should be playing that. But why are we playing, you know, Alice in Chains, Man in a Box, when it's on 24 hours a day?
Yeah.
And even when a regular Megadeth video is being on, you know, why are we playing this if it's being played in the day? Play a different Megadeth video. Why are we playing Metallica 1 when it's going to be on at noon on Friday? I agree. We shouldn't have ever played anything that gets regular rotation. That doesn't mean we don't play the bands like Soundgarden or Stone Temple Pilots, but don't play, you know, don't play Plush on Headbangers Ball if Plush is being played in the daytime. You know, play, you know, Sex Type Thing or whatever it is. Anything else from the band, just don't play the hit that's being played during regular rotation.
Yeah, especially like in the, for the while there when they had the countdown to the ball, and I think the number one video one time was like Blind Melon's No Rain. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, that's not the countdown to the ball. Like, you know,
right.
No matter how much you love Shannon Hoon, that's not a Headbangers Ball video.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good Shannon Hoon stories in the podcast too. Crazy Shannon. That guy was not what people think he was.
Oh yeah, I've definitely heard the Shannon Hoon stories on the podcast. And I guess kind of wrap up the Headbangers Ball portion of the pod of this show. But, you know, the one thing that a lot of those bands are still living off of those videos that were played on Headbangers Ball. Like, you know, there's still bands out there that I feel that are touring that still have to play those videos, you know, 25, 30 years later, like a Morbid Angel, like a Carcass, like Obituary, like all those bands that are still touring. I would say that some of those era albums, because they were played on MTV, and kids got into them are still like some of their strongest points of their catalog.
Yeah, I just saw Obituary play last week, so it's fun to see, and it's fun to see to like meet people that were from that era. That I mean, I met almost every band, but like I just met John Joseph from the Cro-Mags, and I never met him before, and that was really fun for me. And it's fun to see a lot of those people. But yeah, a lot of these are bands that were big in that era that are still out doing it. And you know, the beauty is that pretty much a lot of episodes are still out there on YouTube or somewhere. Not all of them, but you can still find certain videos and interviews and stuff like that of that old band. But I mean, it's not like I'm just trying to recapture something that's gone, but I think that Headbangers Ball would be great right now because there's so many great rock bands.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, and you look at the festivals, and it's the festivals with all these heavy bands that are playing that are getting all the people there, and there's a lot of great shows. So I wish I could do another show like that.
Well, now that the podcast world's opening up, you know, and I think you even said it on the podcast a couple of times, you don't know how many Cat House stories there are out there to keep going. After, you know, if there's a conclusion to the Cat House podcast, do you plan on doing any kind of interview show or talk about music show or whatnot?
Yeah, I had a very successful talk radio show in Los Angeles called Ricky Rackman Radio that I interviewed everybody on the show, from Quentin Tarantino to Milton Berle to Rob Halford to everybody. And I would just do the craziest stuff on that show. And unfortunately, it ended abruptly when I got into a fist fight with another DJ. So I stopped doing talk radio for a while. But there's certain conventions that I've interviewed people like, you know, I actually have one of the very last interviews with Burt Reynolds. So I'm thinking about bringing back Ricky Rackman Radio, which would be interviews with, you know, I might do Dave Grohl and then play an interview that I did with, you know, the actor Robert Blake or something else, and have like no format, no agenda. It's so funny. It's like, okay, I'm going to call my show No Agenda. I was like, oh, No Agenda was already taken, and it was taken by Adam Curry.
Nice.
Adam Curry was, I'm like, really? I go, I want to do a show called No Agenda, and that show's already taken by Adam Curry. How funny would that be if I started a show called No Agenda? But he was actually one of the people that started. I mean, that's when everybody's like, whatever happened to Adam Curry? I'm like, that guy, I think, kind of started podcasting.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So, go figure.
Right? Yeah, Adam Curry, man. It's funny, I put a vague post out on Facebook about, getting to interview one of the guys that gave us a few hours of metal in my teen years, and everybody hit me back with Dee Snider, and I'm like, dude, I'm not that old.
Right.
But man, yeah, the lineage of Headbangers Ball hosts actually is a pretty who's who of even metal today with Josta, and I think Jose Mangan did some stuff too, and you know, you
but
and,
you know who I didn't know hosted Headbangers Ball?
Who's that?
Howard Stern.
Really? I didn't know that either.
There's all these people that had one time hosted Headbangers Ball, and I was the best, but I think
I agree,
and definitely the most humble, but I think, but Howard Stern hosted it for a little bit. Dee Snider, when they talk about Headbangers Ball, I mean, even Downtown Julie Brown hosted it for a while. I look at the very first Headbangers Ball host as being Dee Snider, even though I think it was called Metal Mayhem.
Yeah, yeah.
And then from Dee, it went to Adam, to me. I did it for 5 years. Then the show was canceled. And then Jamie Josta, and I don't really remember if Jose did a show called Headbangers Ball or not. I mean, I think
he did something like on the website, like it was.
Yeah,
real
that
deep.
Doesn't count.
Right,
that doesn't count.
It's
but
like,
I still think
like
Jose
right?
is great. I mean, if Jose is the Headbangers Ball guy today, without a doubt,
yeah,
he's
yeah.
great at it, and I like Jose. But you know, when people say Headbangers Ball, it's usually they think of me, which I don't mean to be conceited when I say that, but it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm flattered, and that's just like, I mean, that's so complimentary to know that a show that was such an impact to so many people, you know. And when I see like, oh, a thing about MTV VJs, I forget like, oh, I was an MTV VJ. Like, I still look at myself as not being an MTV VJ when I was one of the MTV VJs, you know.
you know, looking at your time on Headbangers Ball, it blew me away that it was only 5 years. It's like in my adolescent brain, I mean, you were on Headbangers Ball for 30 years for all I knew. But yeah, it's crazy how impactful those 5 years are. And to even 25 years later, knuckleheads like me are wanting to interview you and people are still asking, you know, what's up with Ricky, or oh, he just put out a podcast. That's awesome. You know, and a lot of those are fans from, you know, 30 years ago.
Which is, this is great. And I think there's a several years that I was like, hey, I want to do other stuff. I'm not just a Headbangers Ball guy. And I kind of diminished that show. And I kind of looked at it like, okay, I want to distance myself from Headbangers Ball, which I think was wrong on my part. And I kind of regret doing that, because when somebody would say, dude, you're the guy from Headbangers Ball, I'd kind of roll my eyes, which is kind of screwed up, because especially the show was important to so many people. And for me to say, whatever, is kind of a dick move, because you're just kind of discounting what was something that was important to somebody. And now, you know, I wear that as a badge of honor. It's like, yes, I got to be that guy from Headbangers Ball. How lucky am I that that was what my job was? You know, that was so flattering. And it's still overwhelming to think that, because I'm just Ricky, you know, I'm just that guy from Hollywood. And to think that I was that guy that hosted that very popular show is still very cool.
Do you find it to be, you know, there's like a lull period in there, you know, where a lot of the 80s bands, you know, kind of had to go away to come back and be, you know, loved again? Because, I mean, there was a time, you know, in my adolescence and growing up that, you know, Rat and Cinderella and all those bands were not cool. But now they're all people talk about again. It's like, you know, anytime you turn around, you turn on Blabbermouth, you turn, you know, look at any metal website right now, there's going to be somebody talking about Warrant, or, you know, Guns N' Roses doesn't count, but I'm saying, you know, like those, you know, Warrant and Rat and Cinderella, and what's Fred Corey doing? And, you know, Fred Corey's getting up and playing drums with John Five. And I'm like, you know, it's cool to be from the 80s again, where there was a huge period where it wasn't. And do you think that affected you at all?
Yeah, of course it did, because there was a time that nobody cared and everybody wanted to move on to something else. And it's funny, because you mentioned John Five. There's going to be a pretty interesting Cat House Hollywood podcast eventually about John Five, because he used to go to the Cat House when he was just like this. We'd sneak him in, and he was nice. This long blonde haired in a Hawaiian shirt dude that was friends with the people that owned Sunset Strip Tattoo. And everybody's like, dude, this guy, John Lowry, man, this little kid is such a good guitar player. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And we always let him in the club because he was this like fun, nice little kid that we all liked, right? And for him to become this like John Five is so funny. But the great thing is, the times that I've seen John Five, he is still that guy. He is just the sweetest, nicest guy. And it's just funny to see people that were just guys that we'd sneak into the club to be a rock star. You know, everybody's like, oh my God, that's John Five. I'm like, you mean the guy that we snuck into the club with a Hawaiian shirt on? You know, so it's just funny that you mentioned him, because he's such a great guy, you know?
Yeah, I think I've had him on the show 3 times. Anytime they send out a press release, you know, interview-wise, I'm like, I'll have him on anytime. I love him. He's one of my favorite guests to have on here. So
he's a great guy.
We'll kind of talk about that with the kind of the Cat House connection. Let's see how I can word this one. Were there guys from back then that you thought were going to be the most, like the hugest rock stars ever that never panned out? And then maybe like a John Five type that, you know, people that hung around that you never expected to kind of pop up, you know, any examples of those guys?
I thought the London Choir Boys would have been bigger.
Mm-hmm.
That was a band that, to me, they sounded like Rod Stewart and Faces, and I thought they were just a great rock band. I really thought they would have been bigger. And the one guy that used to hang out at the club and the band that played that I never thought would ever make it was Sugar Ray.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Mark McGrath was always at the club, and I never thought that they would make it. And Mark did pretty damn good for himself, you know? So that was the way, and people don't understand that there's Cat House history with him as well. So it's kind of funny. I mean, Johnny Depp used to go to the Cat House. Brad Pitt was waiting in line at the Cat House. I mean, there's so many stories of people that you never thought would end up doing anything that obviously did quite a lot.
So you were basically born and raised on the Sunset Strip. What was that like for you growing up in that era? You know, you basically saw it from birth, and you were a huge part of, you know, that entire scene, you know, seeing from the transition from the 70s to the 80s.
Well, because I never came into the scene, it's just what I saw happening. It was just what I did, you know, so it didn't seem that out of the ordinary, you know, for me to go see Guns N' Roses play 200 people and driving them. And then it just quickly they became big. And that was weird just to see them become big. But this was my home, you know. The Sunset Strip has memories from when I was 12 years old to memories when I was, you know, 40 years old. And because I never left Hollywood, that is why I left Hollywood. That's why I live in North Carolina now, because I wanted to get out. I wanted to see, like, what is life like outside of Hollywood? And that's one of the reasons that I moved. And now when I go back, it is sad because it's so different. And without a doubt, for the worst. You know, there is no electricity. It's just sad, you know. So I'm glad that I lived there when I did.
Well, I know that's kind of what Nashville is going through, which is where I grew up, and, you know, where all of the history is being torn down to put up hotels for people to come in that want to look at the history. It's like you're tearing down what people want to see to put up a high rise hotel. You know, it doesn't make any sense. The thinking there.
Yeah, and I mean, there's hardly any clubs in Los Angeles anymore. And now I hear they're tearing down the Viper Room, so mm-hmm. It's really not going to be any clubs in LA anymore.
Yeah, I mean, to make a hotel, I believe, right, or condos.
You're right. So, you're right. It's definitely a shame.
Yeah, it's insane. Was North Carolina, was that due to racing what brought you out there, or just
yes and no. I mean, I thought that I would end up working a lot in racing more because I moved here, and I didn't. But the truth is, it's like I'm sitting here right now looking out at a forest. And if I look to the right, I can see a lake, and there's a boat slip that's got my boat in it. And when I lived in Hollywood, it was like, is there going to be a place to park my motorcycle? You know, so it was, and I can go to Hollywood whenever I want. So it really was the quality of life. The people are nice here. I love racing. I love the Carolina Panthers. I love Southern cooking. And I like being able to afford a really nice house that I couldn't in LA. I mean, that's the truth. I couldn't afford the type of lifestyle that I have here. So,
yeah, I don't see anyone does. Was Nashville ever a thought? Because I know that obviously around the mid 90s is when, you know, I would start going to shows, and I'd be standing there, and I look over, and the Nelson twins are standing next to me, or I'm meeting Fred Corey, and I'm, you know, in the studio with Fred Corey and Eric Brittingham, and Jeff LaBar is at my practice space, and, you know, Mark Slaughter's practicing two spaces down from us and stuff.
Right.
You know, was there ever a thought of the Nashville trip, of the Nashville move?
Well, no, just because a lot of people moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
A lot of people did go to Nashville. Nobody was going to Mooresville, North Carolina,
right?
You know, so for me to go to Nashville, it'd be like going to Las Vegas or going to Los Angeles or going to a place where a lot of people were going. It's like there wasn't a real rush to move to Mooresville, North Carolina. So I think, you know, if I move to North Carolina, I get to do my radio show at the NASCAR Hall of Fame, which is pretty cool. And I just really like it here. I do love L.A. and I do miss L.A. But I love it here.
With the racing connection, how often do you, I know that like Mark Morton's a big racing guy. You know, how often does that kind of cross over, you know, with sports and music for you?
Other than Mark Morton, I don't know. Not enough. I mean, I get the cool thing is there are a lot of, you know, drivers that are into metal. There is, like, you know, you've got your Ryan Blaney's and your Bubba Wallace's, and those guys are big time metal fans. And it's fun to go into, you know, go to certain, you know, big NASCAR driver like Brad Keselowski saw an interview with me interviewing Nirvana, and he's like, Ricky, because they know me just from NASCAR, just right. From being the tattoo. And he and Brad Keselowski says, Ricky, what did you used to do? You know, like
nice.
These people don't know. And a great example, and this to me, like, if you would have told me this when I was in my 20s, I would have said, no way. This is so bizarre, and I think so cool. I'm going to be flying out next week to Delaware because I work at the Monster Mile interviewing drivers for fans. But I'm doing a podcast talking about heavy metal and sex and drugs and decadence. And then I'm going to go to Delaware and get on stage with a bunch of NASCAR drivers talking to kids about why they should exercise and getting kids to do jumping jacks. And everybody's like, oh, God, that's so out move. I'm like, really? I'm like, no, that is like kind of the coolest thing in the world that I can get up on stage and say, okay, kids, this is time to do our jumping. And got news for you, everybody. I ain't getting paid a penny to do it. It's not going to do anything for my career. Why am I getting on stage in front of 100 kids and telling them why to do jumping jacks? Because it's going to be fun. You know, I mean, how awesome is that?
That is awesome. I wonder the crossover here. And if you, I mean, you probably hung around a little bit more high-profile guys than I did, but when you go into an area with NASCAR drivers and some of the guys, and word gets out that they're NASCAR drivers, do the girls freak out as much as they do when you go into, say, a bar with a band? Because I know, I'll give you a personal experience. I took out some of the Tampa Bay Lightning one time into a bar, and the word got out that there were like professional athletes in the club, and you thought a riot was about to bust out over some hockey dudes, to where I've been in, you know, a strip club with the Deftones and no one could have cared less. So,
right.
So I, you know, does that kind of translate there with the racing guys too?
Well, I'll tell you, when Dale Jr. was racing and Dale Jr. was single, that guy was a rock star. And today, you know, like people like, you know, it was really, this was kind of fun. One time I'm doing driver introductions at the Monster Mile at Dover. And my job is I get up there on stage in front of the crowd and I say, coming up next, the driver, the number 21, the driver, the number 12, Ryan Blaney. So this happened several years ago. I had never met Ryan Blaney. I'm on stage saying, ladies and gentlemen, Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney walks behind me and he says, I want to go see Slipknot. And walks to his car, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, right on. So Slipknot's coming to town. I call Corey, hey, can you know, I want to bring this kid to the show. So I bring Ryan Blaney to Slipknot. The guy is banging his head, going crazy. And the coolest thing is I'm going to the show, and people are asking me to hold the camera. Hey, will you take a picture of me and Ryan? I'm like, yeah. So I'm taking a picture of him and Ryan. And then people are going up to Ryan. Hey, will you take a picture of me and Ricky? Like, they weren't like Ryan and Ricky. It was like there were some of Ricky fans, some Ryan fans. And what was really great was to see him out there just banging his head, going crazy. You know, I love that. You know, there's a driver named Regan Smith, and he's friends with the guys in Avenged Sevenfold. And we were at a show, and I was like, wow, this band's like kind of good, you know, like I didn't want to like them, but they were really, really good. And he's like, do you know him? I'm like, no. He's like, do you want me to introduce you to the guys in Avenged Sevenfold? I'm like, okay. So it was kind of funny to have a NASCAR driver introduce me to somebody in a band, you
right?
Know, it was just so there is some crossover, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I saw some photos recently. I think it was Bristol, maybe, you know, of 20 years ago Bristol compared to like recent Bristol. And the crowds are a little bit smaller. Do you see a decline in racing, or what's the world of racing look like right now, and what does it kind of need to get a jolt back into it?
The same thing. It's the same thing as rock and roll, except people are still going to rock shows. They're just not going to clubs.
Yeah.
But seeing a little bit of a decline is the understatement of the world. There is a huge decline. Bristol used to fit over 100,000 people, and you could not get a ticket to the August race there. You could not, years in advance. Now there's like 20,000, 30,000 people maybe in the seats. Maybe I'm off a little bit, but you can walk up and get a seat, and people aren't going to races anymore. And in my opinion, the racing is good. So you can sit here and say, NASCAR's dead. There's so many empty seats. Or you can say, damn, I can go to a race right now and get a seat pretty cheap and have a really good time. So that's the way I'm looking at it. But yes, there's a huge decline, and it's slowly but surely starting to pick up again. I think NASCAR's problem is that they talk too much about technical stuff and rules, package, and aerodynamics, and people don't care. They want to know what this driver's all about and they want to know personalities. I know I do. I know I like a driver like Clint Bowyer because he's crazy like me. You know, I don't care about rules, package, and
restrictor plates and things like that that just mean nothing to me.
Don't care.
I mean, that's the thing. I don't know. I don't, you know, with Dale Jr. being out of racing and even Danica Patrick, you know, like the name, I don't really know any of the names right now. And I don't know if that's a marketing thing or if that's just a I'm not paying attention thing or there's just not a huge star out there that's, you know, there's no Tiger Woods of racing right now.
Right. You're right. But it'll change. It'll change and everything will come back, I think. I hope. Yeah, things. I mean, things are changing, and you know, it just happens. But I think everything's going to turn around. I love going to races, and I think everybody should go.
Well, Ricky Rackman, man, I honestly can say that this show probably wouldn't exist without you being there. You know, 30 years ago on my.
Don't blame me.
No, hey, you know, you definitely. If you weren't picking the videos or not, you know, you definitely circumnavigated my youth and led me to some really cool bands and, you know, ruined my life, you know, being a metalhead for life, you know, getting into that. So I just wanted to say thank you, you know, while we were recording, just a huge thank you for being, you know, being there every Saturday night, man, for a young kid. It was a cool experience.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate it. And yeah, thank you very much.
Well, cool. And the Cat House podcast is pretty much anywhere you can get it, Spotify, iTunes, any podcast catcher, you're going to find it. And just make sure to follow what Ricky's doing, man. He's doing a lot of good stuff.
Thank you very much. Yes, Cat House Hollywood podcast. Please, everybody, go listen.
Hello everybody, this is Rob Rivera from the band Nonpoint, and this is Rob's Pick from the Kit segment. on the Talk to Me podcast. Before we get to the pick, I want to let you guys know that my band, Nonpoint, is going out with POD on the Full Circle Tour Part 2. We're doing it again all over the country. And this time we're bringing in Hiro the Hero on select shows, Islander again, and Nine Shrines. We're very excited about this tour. We're friends with all the bands. This should be a really, really good time. So we're going to do this with POD again, and it's been a blast touring with those guys. And for all the ticket information, you go to nonpoint.com. You can go to each venue's Facebook page. They have ticket information there, too. And we have two awesome VIPs on nonpointstore.com, which is an acoustic VIP and a bus hand. So go to nonpoint.com for tickets, nonpointstore.com for all VIP information. Also, want to let you know that myself, Rob Rivera, and my awesome partner, Rob Ruscha, who's a former bassist of From Zero and engineer of the last two Nonpoint albums, who has a studio in Chicago called Uptown Recording, and he actually is the bassist on the last studio album called X of Nonpoint. We have launched a podcast called the Robcast Podcast, and it's been pretty cool so far. I'm venturing into this world, and actually guys like Joshua, Jamie Josta, has inspired me to do this. So we're definitely going to do this, and we're four episodes in. And yeah, check it out. We're on all platforms. If you want to check out the podcast, I would appreciate it. Give us a nice little review and five star rating. Make us good. So to this week, since we have Ricky Rackman on the show, we're going to play some Motley Crue. And as many people know, Ricky Rackman was very infamous in that era with him owning the Cat House with Tame Me Down, Faster Pussycat. So he has a lot of stories about that era. He also has a podcast, and you can check out some of the stories from the Cat House. So anyway, this is a song, Bastard, from the Shout Out the Devil album, which Nikki Sixx, I believe, described the song as an FU to the police that they fought back in the day when they were crazy and up and coming in the LA scene. I read that, I think, at Hit Parader magazine. They got in a fight with a bunch of cops, and that song, Bastard, is dedicated to them. So this is Bastard from my favorite Motley Crue album, Shout Out the Devil. Enjoy.
All right, huge thank you to Ricky Rackman for taking the time. Thank you to Rob Rivera for putting out his weekly pick from the kit. Thank you guys for listening each and every week. If you want to support the podcast, make sure you are sharing this with your friends on Facebook, Twitter, however you get it out. And also, if you want to support the podcast monetarily, head over to patreon.com/talktome. There's a donate button, or you can become a monthly subscriber. And then also in the show notes every week, there's also the merch page. So get you a Talk To Me t-shirt, and that would be much appreciated. So until next Thursday, I've been Joshua Toomey. This has been the Talk To Me podcast, and I will talk to you soon.